Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be joined by Melanie Murphy, the Chief Analytics Officer at Fluent. I first met Melanie a little over 10 years ago when she was at Bed Bath & Beyond. Initially, she was a senior director and then moved on to become a VP. Now, while that company's hit some hard times lately, back then it was a rising star and in its heyday. And we met and had the opportunity to discuss some of the things they could do to improve their analytics program. Obviously, we both moved on to new roles over time, but we've always kept in touch. After starting her career at Montclair State University, Melanie moved on to Data Powerhouse Experian, where she spent 10 years and finished as a senior director of analytics. She then moved on to Mindtree, a technology and digital consulting firm, where she spent 3 years as a senior director before making that move to Bed Bath & Beyond as I mentioned, a senior director and then vice president. Since 2019, she served as chief analytics officer for Fluent, an omnichannel marketing services provider. She has a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and a master's degree in statistics from Montclair State University. And with that, let's welcome Melanie to the show. Hey, Melanie, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So I always like to start things just getting an understanding of what drew people into the world of analytics and data science. I know in your case, for example, you know, you had undergraduate math and a master's in statistics. So you were obviously had some kind of draw to this area from the beginning. So how did that, how'd you get here?
So actually it was more my kind of friends and classmates that actually, you know, got me into the field. You know, while my degrees are in math and statistics, I originally had no idea of what to do with it, right? All I knew is I loved math. I love problem solving. And I had faith that I would figure it out along the way. And so when I was, you know, first studying at Montclair State, it was largely known as a teaching college, right? And I was probably the only person they're not going to teach. And so I had a professor who was kind of panicking for me, sends me off to the Career Resource Center, is like, you have to figure this out, right? I don't know if I took him all that seriously, but I came back to him and I was like, well, what I've learned is with a math degree and a pilot's license, I can be an astronaut, right? So I'm like, if I haven't figured this out in 4 years, that's the way I'm going to go, right? And so obviously I went for another 2 more years, again, as a stall tactic, honestly. So I loved math. And so even though I declared statistics as my concentration, I think I took literally every class, every math class in the stats concentration, every math class in like the operations research concentration, just keeping my options open, right? And then it was really like, you know, some of my classmates and I, like as we started interviewing different places, like really just kind of ended up, you know, here. And but it's been an amazing journey.
Okay, so I'm not sure if you just made a joke or you literally did have a pilot's license. Did you have a pilot's license when you were young?
Oh, gosh, no. No, but that's what I needed, right? Like, to be an astronaut, just need a math degree and a pilot's license. I'm like, all right, listen, if I don't figure this out, that's what I'm going to do, right? He's like, you're not going to be a teacher. Like, what are you? He was literally panicking for me.
Wow.
So, but that was, you know, the smart-ass 18-year-old in us, right? Where it's like, yeah, this is totally what I'm going to do.
Well, then I know after you graduated, while you weren't teaching, you actually worked at Montclair State for a few years before you jumped over, you know, first to Experian, then to Mindtree. And so what prompted you to, you know, start out in an academic setting, more on an IT side, but then decide to go into the corporate world? And then in that first sort of decade and a half with those two companies in general, like what did you learn that kept you in the corporate world ever since?
Yeah. So, you know, when I worked for Montclair State, like I was working there while I was getting my master's degree, right? So the benefit of being, you know, faculty staff is you obviously get to go to school for free, right? So That was kind of one of the drivers for me, you know, kind of working full time on campus. But it was great. I managed all the computer labs. I had 120 college students working for me. So as you can imagine, crash course in management and leadership, right? Yeah. So that was an amazing experience. And so, you know, right after graduation, you know, I went to work with some classmates and friends as a statistician at Experian. And that was my first real job in the field. And I loved it. You know, I had the opportunity to build predictive models for a variety of different companies across, you know, many different vertical markets and industries, largely focused on customer marketing analytics. And then I quickly grew into leadership positions and was responsible for like delivery of all of like the client facing analytics on the marketing side of the business. And that's really when I learned how to scale and operationalize analytics, right? So we wanted to be able to support as many clients as we could, meet kind of this ever-growing demand for data and modeling capabilities. And then at Mindtree, I played a bit of a different role. So there, you know, I kind of worked really closely with clients to help them assess where they were on the analytics maturity curve. I helped them build out their analytics roadmap, even delivered some of those projects and initiatives, and really helped them kind of quantify the value of their analytics program. So, you know, so after about a decade, you know, and a half of working with so many clients on bits and pieces of their analytics journey, you know, I decided it was time to venture to the client side. And I really wanted to see firsthand, you know, the impact that analytics and my decisions, you know, that I was making, like good, better, and different, were having on the organization, and really, really being able to go a bit deeper.
It's funny you mentioned the scaling, and that kind of brings up when I first met you was when, you know, you were at Bed Bath and Beyond, and other than the recent hard times, of course, they were booming, you know, 10 years ago, and it was kind of the advent of big data. And I know some of what we talked about when you were there at the time I was at Teradata, you all had a Teradata system. It was trying to figure out how to scale all these processes as your, you know, the organization grew, the data grew. So what were some of the, conceptually, what were some of the big retail challenges with analytics and data back during your time at Bed Bath & Beyond?
So when I first got started, I would say, you know, kind of some of the biggest challenges for me were the omni-channel focus, right? So previously I was kind of focusing on individual channels, and then moving beyond kind of customer marketing analytics and kind of really seeing how we can support all facets of the organization, right? And so when I joined, you know, again, like my initial focus was like on building out the roadmap, advancing, you know, the org's, you know, predictive analytics capabilities. They had just built this really comprehensive customer database. They had built some, you know, kind of really powerful segmentation solutions. They were just starting to build out the team and practice. So initially, largely everything I was doing, things I had done before for hundreds of clients, right? So kind of really just getting them caught up to everyone, and then obviously propelling beyond. And, you know, but then, you know, we obviously supported all the marketing, all the channels within marketing. We moved beyond marketing to support like the general managers of the stores, e-commerce, supply chain. You know, we became like trusted partners of like the strategy team and other business units. So as they were launching new company initiatives, you know, and programs, it was about how do we support them through strategy, test design, modeling, reporting, analysis. So like, you know, the end to end. So, you know, for me, and kind of what I have a tendency to do is, you know, again, build out the practice, right? So really kind of embed analytics. So figuring out all the places that, you know, analytics is applicable, how we can solve business problems, you know, have business impact, and, you know, kind of get people to focus on that.
Yeah, you mentioned omnichannel. I think it for younger folks listening, it's hard for them to imagine that omnichannel wasn't a given all along, you know, and back in the day, even 10 years ago, it was only starting to become possible for only the largest companies to actually have, say, web browsing history. And even within web browsing, you know, some of the mouse movement type of stuff that is kind of ubiquitous today. But back then, that was a massive challenge. And so this idea of multi-channel, yep. It was it was fun to be a pioneer in that, but man, I'm guessing that was some of your biggest headaches were just trying to gather and then combine the data and have things not take 48 hours to run.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I guess speaking of that, what were, from both the data and maybe a technology perspective, how you had to tune the algorithms, that scale issue that, you know, you were hitting there along with everybody else in the days when big data hit, what were some of the lessons you learned about how you do scale analytics to the next level?
So a lot of it was, you know, kind of focusing on like how we can implement and use the data, right? So, you know, kind of one of the really important things when you're scaling is making sure that you're aligning what you're developing to exactly how you'll use it, right? Otherwise, there's a lot of kind of different roads you can go and kind of make, you know, waste time and make mistakes along the way. There's also, you know, everyone wants to use all of the data, by the way. And so like, they're like, you know, we're so proud. We have like all of this data. We've, you know, kind of built these really comprehensive systems and people like just use it all. And I'm like, well, that's not really necessary either. Right. And so, you know, kind of teaching people like, it's okay to work with samples, you know, just like something is, you know, as simple as that. And, you know, a lot of it focuses, you know, it starts with the data. It starts with making sure that you can properly connect things. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm kind of speaking kind of across the board and in different groups, and companies, you know, it's so important for analytics to be involved, like at the beginning of a new program, right? Because we're the ones that are going to like follow the data breadcrumbs, right? And if we can follow the data breadcrumbs as things are kind of being developed, it makes it so much easier for us to kind of arrive at scale faster. And so this is one thing that like our strategy team had learned really quickly that, you know, as they're developing new programs, just get us involved in the beginning. We'll help, we'll guide them. We'll help them make sure that we know how data is flowing and data is processing. And then we'll make sure that we can kind of report on it on the end and do analysis. Otherwise I think people just kind of take for granted that it'll magically be there.
It's interesting you mentioned about not having to use all the data. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions. I tell my students every semester, I stress more than one class, folks, you have a massive data set for the project. Now, maybe you want to or possibly need to, probably not need to, but want to run your final processes against all of it. And that's fine. But you're absolutely crazy when you're just testing your code and you're just building this thing out to be using more than a sample, because you're just going to use a lot of resources and wait for a long time and you're not going to be able to iterate fast enough. So I feel like these days I have to convince them you need to just, you know, work with 1 month of data or one product or whatever the case is, so that you're able to make sure things work before you do that, that scale. You know, it sounds like you and your teams learned that either the easy way or the hard way, but followed that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So these days, you know, you moved up. I know when you were at Bed Bath and I knew you, I think that's when you first got promoted to VP. Now you're a chief analytics officer at Fluent. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe just because a lot of folks wouldn't necessarily know of Fluent, give a quick overview of that. And then just tell me a little bit about how has your management style evolved? You know, as you came into that role now as a chief analytics officer at a new company, what's your philosophy in terms of how you're going to manage that organization and, you know, meet the goals that you've been given?
Yeah, absolutely. So Fluent, so if you're not, for those that aren't familiar with Fluent, you know, we are a leading performance marketing company specializing in customer acquisition through our own owned and operated digital media portfolio. And so we leverage our proprietary first party data in a very privacy forward approach to enabling advertisers to reach consumers through tailored audience segmentation. So, you know, we collect a lot of data, we engage with, you know, millions of consumers each month and are leveraging data to, you know, really provide relevant and personalized experiences for them. So, you know, when I joined the team, you know, we were just kind of like, again, brought in to kind of build and grow out the practice, right? So there were some folks, you know, really focused on reporting. There were some folks that were, you know, focused on developing some machine learning solutions. And so really what we've done is really kind of transformed the way that we operate and, again, built out scale there, right? And so we didn't necessarily kind of have a full blown out data environment. So so that's a huge piece that we had to take advantage of. So now that we can obviously kind of scale and make things more efficient. And so the way that my team is structured in general is, you know, I've got three subteams. I've got data science, data engineering, and business analytics. And I have leaders, right, kind of across all of that. And so I would say kind of while initially, you know, I was really focused on kind of putting the right people in place, getting the capabilities out there. You know, I've built a really strong team. And so now, you know, kind of what I tend to spend, you know, a little bit more of my time on is, you know, kind of focusing on working with our business partners and making sure that we understand, you know, kind of their goals and objectives and checking in with them and helping my team kind of, you know, story tell and communicate. And actually, we're going to be using your book as a book club starting in a couple of weeks, which is which I'm really excited to do, kind of throughout the whole team. So that'll be really fun. So I would say I've kind of moved from more of a hands-on kind of teacher and, you know, kind of trainer to more of a kind of coach and mentor and things of that nature. So, and again, really trying to like help support them, remove obstacles and barriers. A lot of what we do is a lot of cross team collaboration. So we do a lot of that facilitation. You know, we operate as a center of excellence. And so, you know, we support as many teams as possible. And so, you know, there's obviously, I always say analytics is a team sport and it's an endurance sport, right? So there's so much like collaboration that coordination that has to happen.
Well, one thing you said, I could tell you, I've never had anyone show me any data that would contradict a claim that the analytics leaders who use winning the room with their teams aren't the ones that end up doing the best long term. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Awesome.
until somebody can show me some data that negates it.
Right.
So I put the poll in the ground.
That's amazing. You'll have to join one of my team meetings and make a guest appearance. But
absolutely.
I've got it all mapped out, by the way. Super excited to get that going.
All right. So, you know, you've described a little bit about your journey. As you look back, what do you think over the entirety of your career, one or two traits you have that you can now see were really what helped you, you know, stand out and get ahead?
Honestly, I think it is what's really helped me be successful is kind of this particular blend of emotional intelligence and soft skills and technical skills that I have, right? And so, you know, even though I studied math and statistics, right, I always, you know, tell students, like, make sure you focus on your psychology classes too, because so much of what we do is working with people, right? And so I think there are definitely, you know, a lot of skills that I have there, right? I've always been really passionate about making sure that, like, what we do gets used, right? So anything that we develop is super actionable and leveraged and impactful. And that takes a lot of, and you don't think about it when you're in school and you're kind of studying these things, but it takes a lot of like leadership and collaboration and communication to kind of really drive some of those things through. But then I've also been really passionate about building high performing teams, right? And so this involves a lot of like developing talent and like understanding team member strengths and figuring out how to kind of bring all that stuff together. So, you know, I always tell people to not just focus on their technical skills, but also focus on the soft skills. And I had a kind of leader early in my career that kind of noted, she's like, you know, you really have like a really high emotional intelligence, like this is going to take you far. And so, you know, it's interesting, cause I didn't really think about, I didn't even know what it was then when she kind of mentioned that, right. But I was like, but it's, I think it definitely takes you far.
It's so funny you'd say that too, because I can tell you, if I ask this question, not just as to guests on my webcast, but in general, when there's conversations at an event and there's some analytics execs around, the single most common factor, either mentioned as their own success or what they're looking for in people, comes down to a variation on what you just said. And so I always hope that younger folks that watch some of these webcasts will notice this pattern and take it seriously, because I'm not sure that everybody believes it at a young age. I'm not sure I believed it at a young age. When I got my first job, I thought it'd be all about how well I could code and how good my models were. And it's not that those things didn't matter. But this reality that you laid out about, if you want to move up into a senior management role, those things become secondary very, very early in your career, really.
Yeah. And I didn't do it on purpose, right? I just had this leadership notice, like my pattern, right? Which my pattern at the time was, I wanted to solve the hard problems. They knew I could solve whatever, so they give me a new problem to solve. I would solve it. I'd make literally whatever mistakes along the way. But then as soon as I was done, I would document it. I would train other people so that I can move on to the next thing, right? And so I think it was just like this repetitive pattern of they saw like how I, kind of really helped other people along. Is really kind of what started, my kind of journey into leadership.
So I know things obviously change over time. Mm-hmm. Today, I know as a CAO, I'm sure normally your calendar is a bit of a mess every day and so forth. But if you were to wake up and you're like, what am I doing today? And you see your calendar, what would be on that calendar or your task list that would make you say, this is a great day, this is why I do this work? What are the things you get most excited about?
So sadly, I get excited about white space on my calendar. It's impressive how many 30-minute meetings you can actually fit into a day, by the way, and constantly change what you think about. So I would say two things. One, white space, and I'll tell you why. And then two, like having some really productive brainstorming sessions, right? And so on the white space, we're hybrid, we go into the office, twice a week. I really enjoy going into the office on days where I have some open time in my calendar, because I feel like I'm able to help more people that way, right? And so people are more inclined to, I just get a chance to interact with people that I might not have, right? And have impromptu conversations that I might not have had, just kind of sitting behind my Zoom or whatever. And so I always feel like those then sometimes lead to other things and other problems that I didn't even know people are having and stuff like that. So it always feels good to be able to like help people out. We are a service oriented team. So the more people we help, kind of throughout the organization, the better. So that's, that just is kind of really helpful. And then, kind of having really productive cross-functional brainstorming meetings. So I'm an extreme extrovert. Right. And so I get my energy from other people. So, when I'm in a meeting with my team and everyone's like actively participating and brainstorming and like kind of getting past different challenges and kind of coming up with new solutions, those are the things that really, energize me and get me really excited.
It's funny. You mentioned you're an extreme extrovert. I found over the years, as I've done some of those personality tests, I've learned about myself. People think I'm an extrovert. And I think I often do a good job of faking extroversion, but it can drain me. So I remember, the weeks when we'd have our annual event for like 5 days, and I'd have meetings from 8 until 5, and then dinners and evening events. And I was with people that whole week. I've never been as exhausted. And it wasn't the physical thing. It was that mental thing. So I think there's, I always find it intriguing how you can perceive people as introverted or extroverted, and sometimes they don't match it. I guess you don't surprise me. Knowing you, I could, I wouldn't have pegged you as an overly introverted type.
Yeah. And it's funny because, as I was kind of learning more about doing the same assessments and stuff that you were and learning about it, I was in a room with a bunch of, kind of leaders, and some of my closest colleagues that I was, kind of always socializing with and working very closely with and kind of building out new things. While I was like on that, like they kind of put us in this U shape, right? So I was on the end of the extrovert scale. They were literally on the end of the introvert scale, which is probably where you'd be. And then I was staring at them like, I don't understand this, right? And so And then, you know, they're just like, you know, Melanie, it doesn't mean we're not social, right?
Yeah.
It's just, we get zero energy from this, right? And I'm like, okay, right? And so, and that was kind of a big thing for me. So left to my own devices, working from home for too long, I go stir crazy. Like, I need to be around people.
Yeah. So one interesting aspect of what you mentioned was you love having white space, but then those are the days you'll go into the office. And I agree, the value of those random meetings and such is important. But effectively, that means that that white space, you don't actually get stuff done. And see, that's where I get stressed. If I see white space on my calendar, I used to always say, now I've got to get stuff done in that time period. So I would have been triple stressed, even though I knew it was important meetings I was having about not getting stuff done, because I set that mental expectation. So do you purposely set the expectation when you go in, this white space is for the team and you're not giving yourself other tasks? Or do you end up, you know, on the way home going, oh my gosh, those were great meetings, but now I'm even further behind?
I try to do a blend, right? Because like I might get in there earlier than other folks, and that'll be the time, you know, that I'll do things. But I do definitely try to make sure that I make myself as available as possible to the team. So yeah, I will let them interrupt me all day long. But I do try to find that focus time for myself, and sometimes that's at off hours and not necessarily during the day. Like early in my leadership career, like I used to block out 3 hours in the morning, you know, before anyone, you know, and I told my team, you can't bother me. Like, you know, from 7 to 10 in the morning, you can't, you know, nobody bother me. And then after that, you know, I'm all yours. Right. And so, you know, especially as I've got, you know, new folks, you know, joining the team, I do, like, I will stop whatever I'm doing just to make sure I answer their questions. And
well, before we run out of time, because I know I've taken a lot of it already, maybe just to finish real quick, what's, you know, one trend that you're seeing as an analytics leader that you think is going to be a big thing for us all as we move forward, say, 3 to 5 years from now?
Yeah. I think even sooner than that is, you know, obviously, you know, everything, all the advancements and kind of what we're seeing from a generative AI and a ChatGPT perspective. But as far as like 3 to 5 years, I would say, even though some of those technologies and adoption of those have happened probably faster than anything else, I think us figuring out how to completely navigate that is what we'll be spending, you know, kind of a good part of our time on. And so, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, making sure that, you know, how do we implement these tools? How do we make sure that we're doing it, you know, in a way that's, you know, responsible and ethical and, you know, leveraging the nuances, you know, of it and, you know, kind of maybe kind of managing expectations, right? Because, you know, there are people that will, you know, think that, well, okay, this is all automatically available. Everyone can access this now. Like, why do we need your team? Right. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. Right. And I think there's a lot of, you know, kind of misunderstanding as well. So I think I will be spending some time is really making sure that we help, you know, kind of people navigate again, how to use it, how to kind of activate what you can kind of automatically do versus the things you would want to customize and make sure that, you know, you've got proper oversight of.
Well, as you know, I'm big into the whole ethics aspect and all.
Yes.
We'll have to save that for another day. I think we could probably talk for for longer than this just on that. So I just want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy day and joining me. And I very much appreciate it, as I'm sure the listeners do.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.